AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 6 geese a lane. Hold up. Who needs 6 geese a lane when you can farm carbon for the rest of your life? That's right. Carbon farming. It's here. And we'll see if it's a gift that just keeps on giving.
Live from the mouths of carbon-based life forms via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Steve Cubbage, VP of Data Services from Farm Mobile. Then it's on to Mike Frank from Nutrient Ag Solutions. In the final segment, Rebecca Carlson from Norway Agriculture. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now filling in for Chip, the hostess of U.S. Farm Report, the incomparable Tyne Morgan. Good morning, Tyne.
Davis, good morning. Can you believe we're just a week away from Christmas?
I cannot, actually. Somebody said it yesterday, like, oh, yeah, next week we get into Christmas week. I thought, wait a second, what?
Yeah, what? I looked at my husband this morning. I said, do you need to do any more Christmas shopping? Is your Christmas shopping done? And he just looks at me like, is this a trick question? Which it was. Mm-hmm. Of course, it is a trick question. But, you know, at our house, Davis, right now, we're not farming carbon. We're farming Christmas spirit. Okay? I'm telling you. Okay. We are going out. It's Spirit Week at school this week. The girls are still in school in person. Thankfully, mm-hmm. it is Spirit mm-hmm. Week. And today, my oldest had to dress up as Cindy Lou Who. Had to. Okay. I posted a picture
fantastic.
On Twitter.
Okay.
You'll have to check it out. I have it on Twitter. But then she goes, hey, Mom, do you remember when I was in your tummy? And I'm like, You know, before you had me. Yes, I remember. And she goes, well, when you had me, why didn't you name me Cindy Lou Who? Good question. I don't know. Cindy Lou Who was not even in the top contender, so I'm not sure.
Wow.
But she is dressed the part, and she said she was spreading Christmas joy and spirit all day. And apparently you cannot call her Kinsler. You have to call her Cindy Lou Who right now. So that's the status at our house, Davis. What about your house?
So she's taken on the complete persona. Yeah, we've got the same thing sort of going on here. I mean, a lot of Christmas spirit going on. If you caught my Twitter last night, I just couldn't help myself from learning the Charlie Brown theme on my bass guitar, if that counts. I don't know if that counts at all.
It was nice.
It was okay.
Setting the stage.
It was okay.
I love this time of year. Absolutely love this time of year.
I do too.
It's an exciting time. And you know, really, I think a lot of folks are cherishing some traditions a little bit more this year. Christmas tree sales. Sure. Our neighbor has a Christmas tree farm, and they just opened it 4 years ago. And she said, Tyne, I know this is a pandemic. I know there has been a lot of challenges this year, but she goes, 2020 for us has been a blessing. I don't know if people are just wanting to get back to Christmas traditions, but we sold more trees in 2 weekends than we sold all year. They are closed because they are sold out of Christmas trees. How amazing is that?
Sold out of Christmas trees.
I love it. And I guess that's a story in Michigan, North Carolina. I'm hearing from a lot of folks. So there is some good to come out of 2020. People are coming back to traditions, and hopefully some of those traditions will stick. But speaking of traditions, your daily tradition, the news, what's going on in the news today?
I'm going to start with a quote which says, the outlook for the economy remains extraordinarily uncertain. That's from Fed Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. During his press conference after the Fed kept the federal funds rate near zero yesterday. Still, he assured investors that the central bank has the flexibility to provide more accommodation and remains open to increasing the amount of asset purchases or buying securities with longer-term maturities in the future. The market responded to Powell's reassurances with the S&P 500 reaching session highs yesterday. The U.S. Treasury Department says Vietnam and Switzerland have intervened in foreign exchange markets in a persistent, one-sided manner to limit appreciations of their currencies, marking the two nations as currency manipulators. The action is mostly symbolic, requiring the U.S. administration to consult with the International Monetary Fund to try to eliminate the unfair advantage the currency measures have given a country. By law, the designations trigger negotiations that could eventually lead to the imposition of tariffs, but there is no automatic penalty. Growth Energy CEO Emily Skor wrote congressional leaders to urge them to extend tax credits to biofuel producers, saying, quote, the second-generation biofuel producer tax credit, a $1.01 credit per gallon of second-generation biofuel, is set to expire at the end of December 2020, and it provides an essential incentive for biofuels industry to produce a low-carbon, renewable fuel, which keeps our rural communities afloat. Brazil is close to a deal to allow more corn sales to China, according to Bloomberg. Talks between the governments of Brazil and China are in advanced stages, with many of the technical barriers and issues relating to preventing the spread of pests or crop diseases in the process of being resolved, said people related to the matter. U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer said the U.S. contention that the WTO has failed relative to reining in China has spawned global agreement that the world trade body needs reform. Signals so far from the incoming administration are that they do not plan on changing the current U.S. trade stance on China, and President-elect Joe Biden has ordered a review of the Phase 1 trade deal. And finally, on the ethanol side, U.S. and Brazil have failed to reach an agreement to avoid Brazil imposing a 20% tariff on ethanol imports. Initially, biofuel proponents called the tariff, quote, devastating, but a closer look suggests trade data has Brazil not as a hugely major consumer of U.S. ethanol to begin with. So sort of a scary headline there, Tyne, but he drilled down deeper into the details of the U.S.-Brazil ethanol relationship, and it may actually not be that big a deal.
Davis, thanks so much. We appreciate it. And we'll see how that's impacting the markets coming up with Pro Farmer. But before we do that, Greg Henderson, editor of Drover, is on with us today. Greg, we're talking about carbon and how agriculture may be part of the solution, but we've heard for years on people claiming that animal agriculture is the problem. Is that the case?
Absolutely. We've been hearing about that for years, Tyne, and I want to talk about methane. And specifically, I want to tell your listeners that the ultimate expert, which is Dr. Frank Mittlenauer from University of California at Davis, is going to be available for them to listen to virtually at the Driftless Region Beef Conference, and that's January 26th at 7 p.m. And there's also a five-minute video on YouTube, and the title is Rethinking Methane. So if you can just remember that and you Google that, you can hear Dr. Frank's 5 minute. But basically what we want to say is from Dr. Mittlenauer is that carbon is the most prolific greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, but methane from cattle only stays in the atmosphere for about 10 years. So if you had a feed yard or a dairy in business for 10 years, you're not adding to the methane there. However, the carbon that we're putting in stays in the atmosphere for 1,000 years. What he wants people to realize is that cattle can be part of the solution there because of the recycling that cattle do from grazing cattle and grazing grasses and so forth. So that carbon cycle and cattle can become part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, you know, we've been talking about this for years, but do you think folks outside of agriculture are not pointing as many fingers now as at livestock producers?
They still are, and the reason I say that is that, you know, we see this on the sustainability buzzwords from people and from companies. They want to know that the food that they eat is, you know, comes from animals raised responsibly and that they're not contributing to an environmental issue.
Yeah. All right. Well, how can agriculture continue to be part of the solution? That's next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Performance Beef, easy to use cattle management software.
Adverse weather conditions paired with some herbicides can cause crop injury early in the season. I'm joined by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, How do growers ensure their herbicide is developed with crop safety in mind?
Well, it's important to assess your weed management program to ensure it can adapt to Mother Nature's curveballs. And you know, Chip, we've had a lot of curveballs the last few years. Fortunately, there are flexible, crop-safe corn herbicides on the market that will help crops withstand unpredictable weather and protect them from yield-robbing weeds.
All right. So what considerations should growers make when selecting a crop-safe product?
Well, it's critical that growers use a corn herbicide that has been proven to deliver excellent pre- and post-emergent crop safety, even in those adverse weather conditions. Not all products include a crop safener, and even if they do, particularly in the case of generics, it's unknown what safener is being used or at what rate. A herbicide with powerful, broad-spectrum weed control, long-lasting residual, and proven crop safety will be key for a higher yield potential.
Yeah, okay. So for a grower looking to not only protect their crops, but also maximize yield, what do you recommend?
Well, that's a good question, Chip. Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential while providing excellent crop safety as both a pre- and post-emergent herbicide. When used according to the label, it offers application flexibility from 28 days pre-plant up to 12-inch corn, has the longest-lasting residual control, and the reliability of a proven corn safener, Binoxicor, for crop safety even with unpredictable weather conditions. All these factors combined provide powerful weed control that other products miss, and we deliver 5 to 15 more bushels per acre than any other herbicide.
Excellent. Good stuff, Steve. Thank you so much. That was Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, talking to us about how to select a corn herbicide with crop safety in mind. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels per acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%. Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize American Farmland Trust for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Thursday. All right, we're going to dig into the issue of carbon farming. Is it here? Is it too good to be true? We're going to be talking about it today. But before we check in with Steve Cubbage, founder of Record Harvest, we have this industry spotlight.
Steve Wilkins is the Golden Harvest Agronomy Manager in the East. David Schlake, Golden Harvest Agronomy Manager in the West. They both join me right now. Guys, as we get ready for 2021, what should we be thinking about agronomically for 2021? Steve, let's start with you.
Yeah, a couple of things, Chip. This year in our geography, let's talk about Southern Rust having a presence. Let's talk about Physoderma that's continuing to grow in presence. And certainly, we did see tar spot come in late, and we anticipate on corn acres with the inoculum, that's going to be a problem for us in 2021.
All right, David, what about you out west?
Yeah, you know, in the Western Corn Belt, probably one of the biggest threats we've seen picking up the past couple of years has definitely been corn rootworm. We've seen corn rootworm expand its range and the numbers increase in corn on corn fields. So, yeah, definitely we need to be mindful of corn rootworm on corn acres in the Western Corn Belt.
All right, David, what's got you excited about Golden Harvest for this coming year?
Yeah, I'm really excited about our upcoming corn portfolio. It's packed with products with strong agronomics, great yield potential, and stability. Particularly excited about G10L16 for the Western Corn Belt is a product that I'm really excited about for next year.
Excellent. Steve, what about out east? Which one performed well?
So we had really strong performance this year with Golden Harvest G10D21. Really, really pleased with what we saw. Corn on corn acres, rotated ground, you name it. We had a really strong advancement class this year that's going to build and help the portfolio around that one, but that's going to be our staple going forward.
Excellent. Steve, where do we go for more information?
As always, you can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and also goldenharvestseeds.com is where you can get all the information you need.
Excellent. Golden Harvest Agronomy Manager Steve Wilkins and Golden Harvest Agronomy Manager David Schlake.
Thanks, Chip. All right, joining me now, Steve Cubbage, founder of Record Harvest. Steve, how are you on this Thursday?
I'm doing fine, Tyne. Thank you.
Well, I'm excited to have you on because carbon farming, this is something that you've really been digging into. Just give us an overview. Talk about this concept. What is it?
Well, you know, carbon farming, you'd think that in this world of COVID and since COVID has come about that carbon farming and the subject of even carbon sequestration would take a backseat to COVID. And really, I think it's actually propelled it forward. And I think we're going to be talking a lot about carbon farming in 2021. You know, obviously, you know, agriculture plays a big role, both, you know, the production of carbon into the atmosphere. But at the same time, we've got a great opportunity to basically be a harbor of you know, carbon in our soil. And that's what I think what, you know, has everybody excited.
Yeah. So, Steve, I mean, the basic concept, correct me if I'm wrong, is farmers doing environmentally friendly farming practices like no-till, like cover crops, utilizing things like that, that some of these major corporations and companies in the world that are working to become carbon neutral, they're looking at farmers to offset their environmental footprint, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, obviously the land is the key factor here and the key denominator that really puts, you know, farmers and producers in a driver's seat because it has that carbon sequestration capabilities and really puts them in the ability to sell carbon credits back to some of those industries that don't have that opportunity.
But is it too good to be true? I mean, to do some of these farming practices that a lot of farmers that I know have been implementing on their operation for years, now to get paid for it, and that be another revenue stream for them, it just seems like, you know, pinch me. Is this really real?
I think it's to be determined, you know, as far as just how real it is. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of jockeying in the space, especially in the next year. I see it kind of being like the Wild West in the carbon market space, because a lot of this is coming about. The good news is a lot of this is being driven by the private side, which means, you know, there's going to be a lot of innovation for this marketplace. And I think that's good. But I think there's also going to be some need to put some, some structure around that. And I think that'll come from the government side. So take a deep breath. And I think the key thing for growers is just start preparing yourselves, because there's going to be some specific asks around this when it comes to what's a viable and what you really need to do in order to prove that you're actually, being able to put carbon back in the soil and be able to compete in this marketplace as a farmer.
Okay. You said prepare yourself. How? What specifically do you want farmers to be writing down right now and how they need to be preparing to maybe jump into this space?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, this is, you know, when you talk about carbon markets, there's going to be an ask of you that's not going to be a short-term ask. It's going to be, you know, putting your ground almost into a set-aside. You know, I look at it almost signing away your mineral rights on a particular piece of land. It's very equivalent, because we're talking up to a decade that some of these contracts or carbon contracts may be in effect for a particular parcel of ground. So I think that's the thing to really understand, that to be prepared. But I think in order for that to even be eligible, you're going to have some background data as far as just what those practices were on those fields. So I'd just be making sure you're documenting everything you can and reading the fine print of anything that looks attractive.
Okay. So what if I rent a parcel of ground? Okay. And I've rented it for 10 years. I plan on renting it for 10 more years. But you're saying to me that, like, let's say we're entering into this relationship for carbon farm that could be a partnership for indeed 10 years. What if they end up selling that land, or I don't have that land 5 years from now? You know, have we explored what that means?
I don't know if we fully vetted that out yet, because I do know that a lot of these carbon markets are looking for, you know, land that is probably initially owned by the producer themselves, you know, but obviously some of that land is even going to change hands in the next 10 years. So I think there's obviously a lot of discussions, and I think there's going to be a lot of legal discussions moving forward. And if I was a farmer, I'd be having this discussion, you know, right now, or starting this discussion with my landlords, because, you know, obviously landlords want to be a part of this as well. And I think, you know, this is going to be a big deal that's probably going to be incorporated in a lot of land rental agreements.
You know, this is a concept that's been around for years, Steve. So why do you think everything's aligning now that makes carbon sequestration a viable option for farmers? What's changed?
Well, I think obviously there's a millennial generation that has driven a lot of consciousness as far as, you know, how their food is being produced. You know, the whole just environment around food and food production and just society in general has driven this. But, you know, obviously, like I said, government's going to play their role, and I think you're going to see that. Obviously, we've got a change in administration, and we're going to be back probably in, you know, as the Biden administration takes place day one, you know, we're back in the Paris Climate Accord, and, you know, there's going to be a big push on the climate side. So this is not going to go away and only accelerate, I think, in especially over the next 4 years.
Well, and the payment side of it, Steve, I've heard it all over the board. Sometimes you get paid per acre. Sometimes you get paid per ton. I mean, who sets that? Is there an industry standard that's out there working? Because right now it seems like it's a kind of a made up system at this point. So who's setting these payment targets or what, you know, some of these goals?
I think that's, you know, once again, to be determined. But I think, you know, how it's being measured, I think there are some organizations out there that's trying to put some really meat on the bone as far as from a standard standpoint. There's a working group or a group out of Washington that called ESMC that is literally working toward carbon and water quality credits and really trying to put some real meat on the bone as far as some of these standards. I think you're going to see that kind of work itself out in 2021, especially.
Real quick to wrap us up, what is the biggest question you want farmers to be asking right now if they're thinking about venturing into this?
Well, I think the biggest question is that, you know, obviously, you know, what's the commitment? How much am I going to get paid? But also what kind of changes I'm going to have to make, because some of those changes are going to be costly as well. So, I mean, you want to make sure that there's a, you know, obviously you're making money on, you know, selling carbon, and that's key, because that's just an alternative crop that's on top of what you can sell right out of the field.
Yeah. All right. Steve Cubbage, VP of Data Services for Farm Mobile and founder of Record Harvest. Stay with us. We'll have much more about carbon farming, but we'll check in with the experts at Pro Farmer to talk about the markets. That is next.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And our expert of Pro Farmer today is Brian Grady. Brian, Christmas, red and green across the board, green for grains. What's going on?
Well, weekly export sales, Tyne, were stronger than anticipated for corn in particular and also for soybeans. So that's given us a little bit of price support. We've talked about it earlier in the week, but the ongoing strike at Argentine ports and soy processing facilities down there continues to support the meal market, although the buying isn't as strong today as it has been in previous days. That's supporting soybeans as well. Still got that overhead resistance in both corn and soybeans that we need to push above, and the primary level there being $12 nearby soybean futures. So working towards that, but haven't quite gotten there yet.
If we pass $12 in soybeans before we hit Christmas, what do you think that means? What does that set the stage for?
Well, it's hard to say with year-end trade. I mean, when we get into those final, you know, 2 weeks of the holiday trade and everything, you know, it's hard to say what the volume will be like and things like that. But you push above $12 in the front month and then $12.08.5 on the weekly continuation chart, and there isn't a whole lot of resistance above that level for at least 50 cents on that continuation chart. So potentially explosive if that does happen.
Yeah, and right now I know you're trying to feed the bull every day. Do you think that does get difficult to do that daily?
Well, you have to come up with some sort of support either on the export side of things or outside sources, weather, whatever the case may be. So there's multiple ways of getting there, but you do need that daily support to keep the buyer interest at least excited.
All right, you can hear more commentary from ProFarmer at ProFarmer.com when we come back, diving into carbon farming. That's next.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Thursday. If you're just now joining us, talking about carbon farming today on AgriTalk. And our next guest is Mike Frank. He's the Executive Vice President and CEO of Nutrien Ag Solutions, a retailer nationwide. Mike, thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday.
Hey, good morning, Tyne. Good to be with you.
Yeah, Mike, you know, talking about this concept, why is it something that Nutrien decided to jump into? Because I know this is a fairly new space for you.
No, that's right. So, look, I think if you start at the kind of a big picture look at this, the demand for carbon credits in North America have doubled since 2017. And if we think ahead over the next 5 and 10 years, we think there's going to be an exponential increase in demand and price for trading carbon. And we believe that farmers can actually benefit from tracking and verifying the carbon sequestration or the greenhouse gas emissions on a per bushel basis that's going on their farm, in their fields, and actually set them up to get credits in this voluntary market for carbon.
So realistically, Mike, do you think truly that agriculture can be the solution, part of the solution, and some of these major corporations that are looking to become carbon neutral by whatever date they set, maybe 2030, 2050, do you think agriculture is part of the answer?
Yeah, there's no question. Look, with technology today, we believe that a lot of farmers can improve their carbon outcomes by about, say, 1 to 2 tons per acre. And even with today's market, you know, if you can validate that and verify it as a farmer, you can probably get anywhere from $10 to $20 per ton of carbon improvement that you can prove on your farm. So there's real value today. I would also say there's real value in the agronomic practices that generate these outcomes. So whether that be slow-release fertilizer, cover crops, no-till farming, things that a lot of farmers are doing today. So the key is to baseline, you know, the carbon performance on their farm today and then show continuous improvement. And there's no question that agriculture can be a huge solution to reducing overall greenhouse gas emissions, and farmers will be able to get rewarded for this as these voluntary markets where companies are buying these carbon credits to become carbon neutral. We think agriculture can be a big part of that. In fact, we think agriculture could potentially be about a third of all the carbon credits that get traded could be generated through agriculture.
Well, how does agriculture make sure that that happens? How does agriculture make sure that they are accounting for a third of that?
Yeah, so it starts with collecting data. And the piece of the data that's critical is you've got a baseline, you know, where your carbon outcomes are today. And then as you show improvement going into the future, then, the way it's set up, Tyne, is there's third-party verification organizations that we believe we can connect farmers with that can verify these carbon outcomes and turn that into then a trading unit. So what we're doing, Tyne, is we're setting up a number of pilots across the U.S. in 2021 where we're working directly with growers. We're baselining their practices. We've got access to an extensive soil testing lab called Waypoint Analytical, which is a business that we own. And so, you know, some of this is going to be through soil sampling. Some of it's through tracking previous practices. And then most importantly, as we plan for 2021, thinking about what are the things that a farmer can do in every field that can improve their carbon outcomes. And by doing that and tracking them, and we've got digital tools that will do this automatically with our customers, we can then work with these verification organizations to validate these outcomes. And once that happens, then the grower can monetize their improvements.
So what specific data are you trying to farm right now? What are you trying to show that really tells the story that companies and corporations are interested in seeing and in turn paying for that information, paying for that, what was harvested?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think the best way to think about it, Tyne, is just really about what is your greenhouse gas footprint? And so we know that depending on certain agronomic practices, again, like no-till and cover crops, farmers can sequester more carbon in the soil. And if they can keep it there by not disturbing it, then they can prove that, you know, they've stored more carbon in the soil. So that's one piece of it. The other big piece of it is when you look at your total output, so your bushels per acre, what was the greenhouse gas impact on a per bushel basis? And again, so this is about farming more efficiently, which ultimately means we're going to help our customers drive yields higher, use technologies like slow-release fertilizer or nitrogen inhibitors, do things like variable rate fertilizer scripts, so they're putting on the exact right amount of fertilizer in the right spots in their field, using biologicals to improve root health. And if you have healthier roots, that plant will be more efficient at uptake on the nutrients. And so you can potentially use less fertilizer on that land. These are the things that can help drive yield and ultimately reduce the greenhouse gas footprint on every bushel that's been produced. And again, the key is you have to track this. And so you have to track it and work with third parties that validate it and verify it. And again, we're using digital tracking tools so that the grower doesn't have a big administrative role in keeping track on every acre exactly what they're doing. We can do that on behalf of our customers, making it easier to get it verified. And then ultimately, once it's verified, then it can get traded in the voluntary market.
Well, I know that Nutrien, you just announced a pilot program starting in 2021. And I know you said that, you know, the interest has been high and you've been hearing about folks all over the country. But in the release, Nutrien calls it the most comprehensive carbon program. Why?
Yeah, so what we've seen in the market up till now is there's a lot of what I would call kind of point solutions. And so, you know, certain companies saying, look, if you buy my one product, it can improve your carbon efficiency, and we'll work with you to try and get a benefit and a carbon trading unit if you just use my one product. What we know when we work with our customers across the U.S. that farming is not that simple. You have to think about the entire ecosystem from, you know, the crop you're going to plant, the hybrid or variety that you're going to use, the traits that you're going to choose, if you're going to use variable rate fertilizer, slow release nitrogen. So this isn't about one small piece of your agronomic practices. This is about all of your agronomic practices, from your tillage practices to the products you choose, how to make sure you're putting them on the field efficiently. We have an incredibly large custom application fleet, and so we can work with a lot of our customers. If they don't have the ability to put on variable rate fertilizer, in most places we can do that for them. So that's why we call this comprehensive. And then we're also working with the verification companies to be able to ultimately verify the carbon outcomes. And so that's why we think that this is, you know, from what we can see, the most comprehensive and a true end-to-end approach, from planning to planting to harvesting and everything in between, ultimately measuring and driving more efficient farming.
Well, Margie Eckelkamp, she's editor of The Scoop and really covers the ag retail space, and she's listening in. And Mike, she wants to know, what's the role of Nutrien Ag Retail footprint and your sales team in the carbon market and working with farmers? What role are they going to play?
Yeah, that's a great question. So look, we've got about 1,000 branches across the U.S. and about 3,000 agronomists. And so, you know, this is really where, you know, technology and people come together to make things happen. And so our agronomists are going to work side by side with our farmer customers, talk about in the planning phase, you know, what have they done in the past? What could they consider in the future that could improve their carbon footprint? And then what makes sense for 2021? And, you know, we all know in agriculture that, you know, farmers often don't want to make wholesale changes from one year to the next. And so how can we start experimenting with maybe one or two or three things in 2021 and track and validate what those outcomes are? And so, look, this is going to be a journey, and we think it's a very exciting journey that ultimately, as we talked about at the beginning, you know, farmers can get rewarded for their farming practices over and above just the yields that they're producing and the grains they're selling into the marketplace. And so our role as a retailer is to work with our customers to help advise them. Ultimately, our customers always make the decisions on what's right for their fields, and then work with them to validate and verify their outcomes.
Yeah, one customer in Iowa just wrote in. They want to know, will every Nutrien site be able to spread fertilizer of those precision farming prescriptions?
Yeah. So look, go talk with your local Nutrien Ag Solutions retail location. We have a strong network across Iowa. We've got a lot of custom application equipment in Iowa. So I hope we can serve that farmer that asked the question. But I would just ask him or her to go talk to one of our retail locations that's close by, and then we'll take it from there at the local level.
Less than 30 seconds, Mike, but does this change what Nutrien sells in the future?
No question. Look, I think, you know, we're going to sell more slow-release nitrogen products. We're going to sell probably more biological products. You know, that could mean less overall fertilizer in a lot of places. And so this does change the mix of products that farmers will use in their fields.
Okay, we'll have much more on AgriTalk next.
Earn a badge, win a Lee Brice guitar. It's easy if you earn an NK Seeds Country Proud badge. Just register at farmjournalfielddays.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Thursday. Well, is carbon farming the future? That is what we're exploring today on AgriTalk. And so to wrap up our discussion today is Rebecca Carlson. She is the agriculture supply lead of NORI. Rebecca, how are you today?
Oh, great. Great to talk to you, Tyne.
I really appreciate you joining us. Well, let's just start with the basics. What is NORI, Rebecca?
NORI. Well, NORI is a carbon marketplace. So NORI is beyond just sustainable farming. We're looking at making a carbon marketplace for companies to come, companies, individuals to buy carbon to offset their own emissions. Right now, we have a lot of ideas, but we're focused on our croplands methodology. So working with farmers who've adopted regenerative ag, who with these new practices are sequestering more carbon than they were before. and helping them get paid for it.
So are the buyers there?
Are the buyers big? Well, they're getting bigger. We're pretty young. How's that? And so as we're scaling up, our buyers are wanting more supply. And so we're selling on smaller scales, and the companies that are starting to buy are getting bigger as we speak.
But are you able to find enough buyers? I know in the past, Rebecca, that's kind of been a challenge is, hey, we have this idea and we know that these companies are trying to figure out a way to become carbon neutral, but we just haven't had a lot sign on yet. Is that changing?
That is definitely changing. Yes, it's changing not only in a very tangible way of like the people who are coming to us are getting bigger. The companies are asking for carbon offsets and how that works are getting bigger, but also like even in the own, like, in the chatter, you know, publicly speaking, like carbon offsets are becoming a huge priority for not only individuals, but companies as well.
So when you look today in the carbon market, what is the biggest challenge from the farmer's point of view?
From the farmers? Well, right now, from the market point of view, from the NORI point of view, getting farmers through our platform in a very systematic way, because the work of carbon farming is on the farm, right? It shouldn't be on the app. But right now, as we're getting farmer data through our platform, which NORI does not own the data at all, it is just used to run carbon quantification tools. Like, that work is still a heavy lift at this point. But it's not only be on the farmer side, but also on the science side. We're working with a very young field of science. And with that comes a lot of questions. And so as we're like sorting through what it means, like what does it mean to actually capture carbon on your farm? Those are pretty big questions that we're working with scientists to you know, sort through. But from a farmer perspective, it's doing the work to do the regenerative ag and change practices and then getting it within our app so they can actually get paid on those practices.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rebecca, talking to a lot of farmers that maybe have done no-till for several years or used cover crop for several years and are saying, listen, we've been doing this for several years, but now we're supposed to show that we have some type of change, that we're improving in some way. Is that a challenge, or is it just really putting the data behind it so farmers can tell this story and then sell that story?
It's both. So when we're talking like within a marketplace point of view, we have the suppliers and our farmers, but we also have our buyers, and the buyers are looking for like new carbon drawdown. So as they're looking for, you know, what's changed recently, even though like ideally some of the greatest farmers to work with have been doing these practices for a long time, what are like the new changes that have happened over the past 10 years to balance what the market is demanding. So working with getting the story behind that, not just, I mean, the practices that have changed to the regenerative agriculture isn't just like a one fell, you did it in 2000, mm-hmm. now you've done no-till for this whole time. How do we pay on that? It's mostly like, what else have you changed, right? What else have you adopted into your operation that helps like build out this good stewardship of the land? And that's not only what we're looking for as NORI, but what the buyers are looking for too, of having this recent changes.
So then, Rebecca, if you're saying NORI is the marketplace, are there not brokers involved? I mean, do you eliminate that step of the equation when you're trying to you know, really line up the buyers and the sellers?
Yeah, so there's always an opportunity for brokers wherever there's a marketplace. But with the NORI app itself, like, we can communicate directly with the buyers and the suppliers to kind of take out that middleman and help the farmers get more money in their pocket to help them actually drive these changes.
So you're saying, because you're able to eliminate that middle person and not have a broker, that you think in the end with the NORI platform, farmers end up getting more money?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because with all farmers, with all these you know, practice changes, like, they're the ones that need more than just a pat on the back. They're the ones that are doing the work. So we really want to incentivize that for the growers.
So how exactly is this data tracked?
That's a good question. The data is used. I mean, there's a lot of data involved, but the data from the farmers is used into the, we work with Soilmetrics, which uses the Comet Farm application for, you know, quantifying carbon sequestration. So that is tracked only on NORI. It's only used for that model. But for the NRTs, which are NORI removal tons, which represent a carbon removal claim, we store those on a blockchain. And that is a way to kind of make this actual like tradable commodity asset out of carbon farming instead of just, you know, paper being pushed. So we actually can trace it of when a buyer has bought it, it is retired, and then that demands more supply.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around all of this. You know, Rebecca, why do you think that this is the future?
Well, I think it's the future because we need it to be. I mean, like I was saying before, this like burden of environmental change, how somehow like a lot of things have fallen in the laps of the farmers, right? And having being able to like support farmers in these transitional practices to sequestering more carbon, to keeping the land covered for, you know, more of the year than just tilling everything up is really such an important driver to climate change and taking out the carbon out of this atmosphere. And to do so, we need to help the farmers. And so by creating marketplaces that actually support them and actually drive market interest around, I think is the future to helping out farmers and also helping out our environment.
Wow. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us on AgriTalk.
Yeah, absolutely, Tyne. I really appreciate it.
All right, that wraps it up. Carbon farming, apparently it is here. Apparently it's going to be the future. And digging into maybe some of the hurdles, but also opportunities when it comes into carbon farming. Great show this morning on AgriTalk. All right, this afternoon, Davis, are you joining me this afternoon as well?
I'm sticking around. You're not going to
get
rid of me.
Ah, that's music to my ears. All right, Chip Nellinger joins us this afternoon. It's going to be a good show. That's AgriTalk PM. Join Davis, join Chip Nellinger, join me. It will be the gift that keeps on giving this afternoon on AgriTalk.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.